Thank you, Brother Jeff. Well, good morning, my brothers and sisters and young people. Well, Jeff's opening comments, we followed the page out of the week already. And I think, yes, there's a lot of uneasiness out there. We can also be dragged down with the worries and cares. Just seeing people walking around with masks, you know, you can't see their face, the smile, you know, the expressions are just gone. And I think, you know, more than ever, we need to be encouraged and comforted in the things we believe and the things that we hope for. So this morning, I'd like to spend a little bit of time thinking about Elijah and an incident in his life where he needed some real encouragement. But I'd like to begin by thinking about the well-known words from Isaiah 40. And we know Isaiah 40 is John the Baptist. It's a message that's prophesying about John the Baptist. He's a voice crying in the wilderness. But the chapter begins with God declaring, "Comfort, yes. Comfort my people, for God. Speak comfortably to Jerusalem and cry that her appointed time is accomplished and her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins." So God's message, and I think this is John the Baptist's message, is to speak comfort to God's people. And there was an expectation that when John came, things were going to change. And people went out across the Jordan to hear John, to hear his message of comfort and hope. And people came and asked him, what do we need to do, John? And his message was one of repentance and baptism. But I'd like to just come back with you then, please, to 1 Book of Kings, the story of Elijah. And Elijah's story begins in 1 Kings 17. And we'll just go through it really, a reminder to ourselves, just a bit of a review of Elijah's life to review the background. But essentially, chapter 19 is where we're going to focus our time in. Chapter 19 is all about Elijah that has accomplished so much for God and for himself, for the nation, and all that in a sense comes crashing down. And it would seem to me that his strength is crushed, his faith is at a really low ebb. But the background to that is quite significant and quite different, and we wonder how Elijah got to that place in chapter 19. And in chapter 17, Elijah boldly comes to Ahab and says, "Unless by my word there won't be any rain in the land of Israel for 3 years, no rain or dew, except at my word," and he leaves. And for 3.5 years, this is so. And in chapter 18, there's a great contest organised between Elijah and the prophets of Baal. And let's just look at verse 20 of chapter 18. "Ahab the king sent unto all the children of Israel and gathered the prophets together unto Mount Carmel. And Elijah came to the people and said, 'How long is it that you waver or you limp or you halt between the two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him, and if Baal be God, we'll follow him. Don't sit on the fence, it's one way or the other. And today we're going to decide,' says Elijah, 'who is the God.'" Verse 22, "Then said Elijah unto the people, 'I, even I only remain a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. So the majority is saying Baal is God. And just one man, Elijah, on Mount Carmel is going to say that the Lord, he is God. And of course we know the contest involved an altar being made, an animal being prepared and put on the altar. There was fire, or no fire, there was wood put under the altar. And the contest was that fire needed to come down from heaven to ignite this altar and this sacrifice. and the God that answered by fire, he is the God. And that was a contest. On one side stood Ahab and his prophets. On the other side stood the people. Elijah, and the people stood in the middle to witness. They hadn't made up their mind. Well, we perhaps know the story very well, that there was silence from the god Baal, as of course we would expect. And Elijah calls the people together in verse 30. After the prophets of Baal had their turn of calling down fire, and he says, "Come near to me." And that was the point. You need to come near to see the power of God at work. And he repairs the altar, and he sets aside and puts his sacrifice on the altar, and he pours the water on it, and he saturates everything. And he says in verse 38, "The fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifices and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, 'The Lord, he is the God. The Lord, he is the God.'" And they were convinced. And what a wonderful way that God has proved to be God. This wonderful miracle that happened with Elijah. And what a triumph it is. And Elijah takes the prophets of Baal, all of them, rounds them up with the people, and he destroys them at the brook Kishon. And then Elijah makes a prediction to Ahab in verse 41. He says, "Get up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of the abundance of rain." But Elijah needed to do much, much more than just say that there is the sound of rain, or that rain's coming. He needed to pray to God. It was at Elijah's word that there would be no rain, but Elijah knew that it was withheld by God. And so in verse 42, Ahab went up to eat and drink, and Elijah went to the top of Carmel, cast himself down to the earth and put his face between his knees. Elijah, deep in prayer on the top of Carmel, and he prays for rain to come. And seven times he sends his servant off toward the sea, look out toward the sea, and tell me what you are looking at there. And just clear sky. But on the seventh time, the servant says, "Oh, I see a little cloud, just the size of a man's hand, coming up out of the sea." And Elijah knew that the rain was coming. And in verse 46, the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he girded up his loins and ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. It would seem to me a considerable distance. I'm thinking maybe 100 kilometres. And it would seem that he gets there before Ahab. But then, as I mentioned, something strange happens in chapter 19. Ahab tells Jezebel exactly what had happened on Mount Carmel, that all your prophets, they're dead. The prophets of Baal, they're gone. Elijah has shown the power of God to the people, and they know that the Lord, he is the God. And Jezebel sends a message to Elijah that it would seem to me to really rattle him, this death threat. Elijah hears the message, "So let the gods do to me and more also, if I make not your life as the life of one of these prophets by the tomorrow about this time." And so Elijah, in verse 3, when he saw that, he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, and left his servant there. So all that Elijah had accomplished on Carmel, this demonstration of God's power, it's faded in his mind, it would seem. Being cared for by God for 3.5 years, this is seemingly forgotten, or it's not recorded at this time. And Elijah takes Jezebel's threats hard and perhaps considers his work as a failure. Verse 4. So Elijah carries on. He went a day's journey into the wilderness and he sat down under a juniper tree. And he he requested for himself that he might die, and said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." I'm no better than anything that came before me, God. I'm a failure, and I want to die. So at this stage of his life, Elijah, it would seem, has just given up. He's alone in the wilderness under this juniper tree, and he wants to end it all. Can we understand perhaps how Elijah is feeling? Have you been in a space in life where, despite all that had gone before, that you feel that everything you'd accomplished, that God had accomplished by you, is in a sense a failure? And things can go so well for us at times. Our faith can be strong, and is strong. We see God at work in our lives and in the lives of people around us. And then all of a sudden, it would seem that the bubble would burst and sickness or the death of someone close, perhaps a job loss, family or ecclesial troubles, or like Elijah, a taunt or a threat from the government of the day, and I suppose, well, the wife of the government of the day, and Elijah's world, our world, can cave in. So I can understand what Elijah was feeling, and I'm sure in some way all of us can appreciate how he felt at that time. But I want us to look at the compassion and the understanding of God at this time as he works with Elijah to bring him through this really, really rough and difficult patch in his life. Verse 5, so as Elijah lay and slept, a sleep of sorrow, perhaps a bit like the disciples in the garden, behold, an angel touched him and said unto him, "Arise and eat." While Elijah slept, God was at work in sending an angel to gently rouse him from sleep. While Elijah had slept, the angel had prepared a meal for him, a cake baked on coals and a flask of fresh water. And of course, again, an echo to the time on the beach after the resurrection where Jesus fed the seven apostles with the fish that were cooked on coals. Just a gentle reminder that God had previously cared for Elijah with providing bread with the ravens, or providing food with the widow of Zarephath and her son. But Elijah is still not ready to face the day, and he lies down again in verse 6. He did eat and drink and laid down again. The second time then, the angel of the Lord, verse 7, comes and gently touches him and encourages him to eat. "Arise and eat," says the angel, "because the journey is too great for you." And indeed it is, the journey was too great for Elijah by himself. And I know that it's too difficult for each of us, by ourselves, without God, and without each other in our lives. Elijah had left his seven behind, and he's there under the juniper tree all alone. And God is encouraging Elijah to go forward. The journey doesn't end here, Elijah. Initially, he laid down under the tree and just wanted to die. The problems had been insurmountable. But the angel of God demonstrates to Elijah his care and his love in providing a meal. And he's done that all the time for the last 3.5 years. Elijah has forgotten, and he needed to be reminded. Just keep going, Elijah. This is not the final stop. Of course, for all of us, we're on a journey too, and it's not. Where we are now is not the final stop. Even though Elijah was running from his fears, through to the government, the angel reminded him that God was still there and would be there throughout the whole of Elijah's life. And of course, there's times that we can feel like we're perhaps running in fear, and that we need encouragement that God is still there. And perhaps 1 Kings 19 is a bit of a help for us to see our God at work in Elijah. God sent an angel to Elijah. He sent an angel to Jesus in the garden in the same way, didn't he? To encourage him. And I think God can also do the same for us. He can send an angel. Perhaps not an angel from heaven, but of course, in this room, there are plenty of angels, aren't there, that can help us on our journey, give us encouragement. And so Elijah, in the strength of that meal, goes for 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. We haven't got what time this morning to have a look at perhaps the parallel account of what Elijah was doing here, and thinking about Moses and the way Moses went to Horeb, the mountain of God. And he says to God, in a sense, look, if you don't go with us, God, then we don't want to go any further. You stay here. We need to know that you're with us. And Moses needed to know that God was with him. And he wanted to see God's glory at that time, to have an assurance that God was with him. And Moses did find grace, and he did find favour in the eyes of God. And Moses besought God at that time to see his glory, to hear what God's name meant, the graciousness and the mercy that God really was about. But now, at the same place, it would seem Elijah is asked a question by God. Verse 9. And Elijah came there to a cave and lodged there, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, Elijah, what are you doing here? I think it's a key question, isn't it? What are you doing here, Elijah? Well, Elijah gives an answer. It's all about what I'm doing for you, God. You know what's happening. How the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, have thrown down your altars, have killed your prophets with the sword, and I'm the only one left. And they seek to take away my life as well. What are you doing here, Elijah? That was God's question. Not once, but twice. But God's reply to Elijah is the show of strength. Perhaps a little bit like Moses. Moses saw the glory of God. Moses wanted to see God's face, and God said, you can't do that, but you can see the effects, or the after effects, the afterglow, if you like, of my glory. But God shows the wind and the earthquake and the fire, and then the still small voice talking to Elijah in verse 12. In verse 13, when Elijah heard the voice, well, he came to the entrance of the cave and stood outside. He came out of that dark spot where he was to hear the voice of God. So again, the question is, what are you doing here, Elijah? End of verse 13. And of course, Elijah perhaps misses the point again, and he repeats himself. Don't you know what I've been doing for you, God? And I'm the only one left. So what is it that we should to try and understand when God would, in a sense, say to us, what are you doing here? If it's about reassurance, God says, well, I can be that for you. Just think back of it. Just think back a few months, or even the few years that we've worked together. I can do that for Elijah. Think about just 40 days ago, that last meal you had, and here you are in the strength of that meal. I know what you need, Elijah. And of course, Elijah needed encouragement. And God sent the angel, didn't he? God sent his angel to persuade you that now is not the time to give up. Now is the time to listen to the still small voice. So I'd like to finish then, brothers and sisters, with perhaps a New Testament sort of take on the same story here. And again, it's about the story of the New Testament Elijah, John the Baptist. And just see a little bit of the events surrounding the sad death of John. So we come to Mark chapter 6, please. And the account of John's arrest and imprisonment is in the three synoptic gospels. And each one gives quite a lot of detail. Mark records that the events prior to John's imprisonment and subsequent death, in verse 7 of Mark 6, that he called to them the 12 and began to send them forth two by two and gave them power over unclean spirits. And that's the event sort of leading up to this. And the apostles, in verse 13, they cast out many devils, anointed with oil, many that were sick, and healed many. Verse 12, they went out and preached that men should repent. They were doing some amazing work on behalf of Jesus. And in the meantime, John is murdered. So the King Herod made a rash oath, and immediately the king was called out on this, and he was required to give the head of John the Baptist, which he did. But the faithful disciples of John in verse 29 heard all about this. They came and took up the corpse and laid it in the tomb. And Matthew's account tells us that they then told Jesus what had happened. And Jesus knew that this was a real turning point in his ministry. It was probably about a year from here before his own arrest and murder. And John's gospel records that there was a general disillusionment. The hard words that Jesus spoke, they couldn't hear them, and they turned back. They were there for the miracles of feeding. And he wasn't able to feed them all the time, if that's what they were looking for. There wouldn't be endless miracles or endless ongoing feeding, and the crowds would turn back. But Jesus here in Mark chapter 6, at the news of John's death, his own relative, seeks some quiet time with the apostles. They come back in verse 30, full of enthusiasm and buoyed up by the work of the Holy Spirit in their lives, the response of the people. But Jesus himself has got some sad news, the news of the death of John. And he seeks to be there in verse 31 alone with the disciples. He said to them, "Come here apart yourselves to a desert place and rest a while." Of course, the comment is that there was much going on. There was busyness, people coming and going, and they didn't even have an opportunity to eat together. Such was the pressure of the day-to-day life. And so Jesus sought this time together with his disciples, the close few that were with him, and they departed to a desert place by ship privately. And Jesus wants their encouragement. I'm sure that was one of the reasons that the 12 were chosen, that they might be with him, to help him. And he also needed to prepare them for the sad news of John's death, and really to talk to them about things aren't going to get better, they're going to get worse. And he gives a number of messages about what's going to happen as they head up to Jerusalem. But I think Jesus is setting a pattern for us that we should have time together with the Lord. And as Brother Jeff mentioned, this is our time together once a week to spend time to be encouraged on a Sunday morning. It's an ideal opportunity to remember, and significantly to remember in England's bread and wine. And Jesus didn't have much time to spend with the disciples, because by the time he got to the other side in the boat, there was already a crowd that were there gathered waiting for him. And he had compassion on them and fed them, and there were about 5,000 men, plus women and children. And so really the next opportunity that we know that Jesus had to spend some quiet time with the disciples was in the upper room around that Passover meal. And it was a large upper room, furnished, prepared and ready. And we know the phrases well from the Gospel of John at this time. And let's finish here with these words. Jesus says to the 12, "Let not your heart be troubled." He says to them, "I'm going to prepare a place for you. I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you will be also." We'll be together. "I'm not going to leave you comfortless," says Jesus. "I will come to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid."